It is time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage for Robinhood Radio and exclusive to Robinhood Radio. David is a multimedia and international journalist with his own online column at themediabeat.us. And as a special correspondent since 2012, he has contributed TV reports to the PBS network, mostly on ethical issues. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning March 29th, 2024. This dispatch comes to you like last week's from Dublin, Ireland, and the news media here are still full of a story that's obviously important locally, but hasn't made much more than a ripple internationally. Leo Varadkar, who has been Taoiseach for two terms spanning the past 7 years, that's the Irish word for prime minister, is unexpectedly resigning for what he said were both political and personal reasons. Big news here, obviously. He's already been replaced as leader of his party, Fine Gael, by a bright young thing. That's one of the kinder shorthand epithets being used for him here, but his actual name is Simon Harris. And within days now, after the Easter break, he'll be formally sworn in as Taoiseach, the youngest one ever in the nation's history, leading a governing coalition of two other parties as well as his own. The background context for this hardly earth-shattering matter of individuals switching seats deserves attention as a considerably more important issue. The context is this. Ireland's current coalition government's term has by law to end early next year, by when a general nationwide election has to take place. The new Taoiseach Harris could call the election earlier than that, but it's highly unlikely that he would. None of his coalition partners want it early, although the media's many opinion polls show that the Irish public wants it. Nobody wants it more than Sinn Féin, the party which is in essence the political version of the Irish Republican Army, and they want an early election for the most obvious of reasons. All those media opinion polls show Sinn Féin as leading, dramatically so, even though it's by a tad less now than the peak it reached last year. Predictably enough, all the national media attention Harris is now getting about his youth, his father being a taxi driver, his intense ambition, his social network adeptness, which has earned him another moniker, the TikTok Taoiseach, has all brought him and his party a bit of a polling bounce, but they're still well behind Sinn Féin. All the indications are that the party representing the guerrilla force that conducted a bloody insurgency for 30 years will end up with enough votes to have a major say, perhaps even the leadership position, in the next government of Ireland. A historic development if achieved. It's worth noting, too, that already in still British-owned Northern Ireland, some protracted shenanigans and a boycott of institutions are now over, and so-called devolved government has finally resumed with Sinn Féin there, in the person of Michelle O'Neill, its regional party leader, occupying the First Minister position. An Irish nationalist in charge of a United Kingdom province. Utterly remarkable. It's happened before in other former British colonies, of course. Nationalist campaigners who resorted to violence to achieve freedom often became the elected leaders of their countries when independence was finally won. A one-time governor of British Kenya, for instance, Patrick Renison, is remembered possibly only for condemning Jomo Kenyatta, who later became the first president of a free Kenya. He called him a leader unto darkness and death, while keeping him imprisoned for his part in the Mau Mau insurrection. Closer to our own times, Margaret Thatcher condemned Nelson Mandela's African National Congress movement, the ANC, as, quote, a typical terrorist organization, while she was insisting that journalists, like me, should deny such terrorists what she called the oxygen of publicity. And we all know what she felt about Sinn Féin in particular. She couldn't help but take it personally. Its armed wing, the IRA, did after all once try to kill her with a bomb in her hotel. They missed her, but did kill several prominent members of her Conservative Party. The evidently likely prospect of Sinn Féin at the head of governments running both parts of Ireland is causing a lot of consternation in Irish media, and beginning to attract attention internationally, too. Militant nationalism is one thing. Governing a nation in real life is quite another. I'm here for a while now and will be reporting on how this intriguing possibility works out over the coming months. The Taoiseach in waiting started out determinedly in one of his first speeches to remind the Irish public about Sinn Féin's violent history and unsavoury connections. He excoriated Sinn Féiners for draping the Irish national flag, the tricolour, over the coffin of a recently deceased IRA gunman. The IRA man had served prison time for killing a policeman with his AK-47, and later seems to have been something of a loose cannon, as it were, being sent to prison again, this time for a stabbing attack on his own wife. Harris spoke in no uncertain terms, saying, "In a week that I saw a tricolour spread over the coffin of a Garda killer," that's cop killer in Irish, "I say shame, let's take our flag back." It's going to be, already is, I guess, a strident election campaign whenever the voting day is set. Irish commentary is always lively, that's a given, and it's often at its liveliest when commenting on America, with which so many Irish people have and maintain a strong connection. Donald Trump's travails come in for a lot of mordant analysis, spiced with, of course, considerable sharp wit. You might remember me citing how in 2020 the Clare Echo, the leading newspaper in County Clare on the Atlantic coast, where Trump owns a hotel and golf course, reported on Joe Biden's victory over Trump with this headline: "West Clare Hotelier Loses Out in U.S. Presidential Election." Trump's desperate search in recent weeks for a surety company willing to post a $500 million bond for him and so prevent his properties being seized by New York's Attorney General couldn't fail to fascinate the Irish commentariat. He may have earned a temporary reprieve with an appeals court granting him a lesser dollar amount to find, and the threat of a New York sheriff coming knocking on the Trump doors has been put off until September at the soonest. But this hasn't ended Irish speculation about Trump's unstable fortunes. The Irish Times couldn't help bringing us the facts on one particular matter, maybe of special religious interest to its Irish readership, or possibly having some relevance to Trump's reliance upon Christian evangelicals for electoral support. It turns out there are legally a few exceptions to what the Attorney General could seize. Trump could keep, I quote, "one motor vehicle not exceeding $4,000 in value, and," says the Irish Times, "any Bibles he might own." The media universe here in Europe, as well as in the US, is adjusting uncomfortably to a Trump development that's in their own wheelhouse. Trump's newly merged company, Trump Media and Technology Group, which controls his Truth Social platform, went public, trading on the Nasdaq exchange. In that highly excitable context, shares soared on the first day to a point of valuing the company at nearly $8 billion. That adds, reportedly at least, nearly $4 billion to Trump's own net worth. Investors who pushed the share price upward were evidently expressing political support more than any belief in the business's real prospects. Indeed, the social platform itself is notable for how much money it's been losing in real life, not in the stock market. On that first day of trading, reporters kept using the word volatility, and trading even had to be suspended because of that. Technically, according to some so-called lockup restrictions, Trump cannot personally access this new cash influx. It's a public company, after all, supposedly very different from the Trump Organization that was so slammed by the New York civil fraud suit. But then, the new media company board is stuffed with Trump loyalists, including Donald Jr., so we can probably expect some attempt to be made at siphoning off funds from all those full coffers to pay off the various massive cash judgments still outstanding against the company's biggest stakeholder. I mentioned a moment ago that Irish commentary is traditionally very lively, but in its comment on the new Trump stock market bubble, as I'll presume to call it, Business Plus, which is Ireland's largest circulation financial magazine, was unusually dry. It simply quoted one analyst reviewing the Trump company. The valuation of the business is rich relative to its weak underlying fundamentals. I venture to suggest that might sum up many dimensions of the Trump phenomenon. That's all from the Media Beat this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.